What do you give credit to God for in your life? What in your life do you give God credit for? I'm not asking you to come up with times when things went really well and be like, oh, that was God doing that thing. You know how sometimes when you barely avoid a disaster, you might say, oh, there but for the grace of God go I. That makes me really uncomfortable because it implies that sometimes God removes God's grace. So I'm not talking about good times versus bad times. Has there been a time in your life where you felt peace? When you felt breathtaking love? When you experienced an unexpected amount of strength? It might have happened just for a moment, and you might not even have the words to describe what it was. Or maybe nothing is coming to mind. Maybe your experience of God is at enough of a distance and with enough skepticism. You know, I love some skepticism. That it feels uncomfortable and maybe even wrong to assign any agency to holiness. After all, I'm the one who says all the time, God is not a master puppeteer. So how is it that God could be involved in the everyday minutiae of our lives? But because you're here on a Sunday morning, I expect that you have felt something. You have felt something that doesn't fit into any other category you've ever been presented with. And so you already are, or you're willing to call that thing God. But which God? So, two apostles, Paul, formerly known as Saul, and Barnabas, one of them from Rome, one of them from Cypriot, walk into a town called Lystra in what we now know as Turkey. They are so eager to share their new understanding of God. They're so eager to share it. And they encounter a man who is paralyzed, who cannot walk. Paul, who is to become the most famous apostle of all, Paul has a conversation with that man, softly enough that the crowds who have gathered can't hear what he says. And then Paul stops, and the story says, Paul gave that man an assessing gaze, and finally, with a full voice, tells the man to get up and walk. And for the first time ever, this man does steadily. Steadily and with joy. Now that miracle, while it is very shiny and dramatic, is not original. We can remember from our study of the Gospel of Matthew that Jesus also heals a paralytic, also in front of a crowd. In that instance, some of the leaders of the community who are in the crowd react with skepticism and even scorn. But everybody else, when they see this, they just want to start worshiping God. The Lystrans are only a little bit different in that we don't hear about any skepticism on their part. They just want to get busy worshiping too. Look at what our gods have done. Get the priest, get the garment of honor, get the cow to sacrifice. Let us begin our worship of our gods. The people of Lystra, when they experienced the same power in Paul that the people of Israel had experienced in Jesus, they are just as quick to identify that power as coming from the divine and wanting to just bow down in thanks and obeisance. The problem, though, for Paul and for Barnabas is that the people of Lystra, rather than the God of Moses and Ruth, the God of Eden and the Exodus, they give all the credit to this miracle to the God of Olympus, to Zeus, and to his divine herald, what's his name? Hermes. They give their credit to Zeus and to Hermes. Again, the Lystrans are no different than the ancient people of Jerusalem. They see that something greater than them is at work. They just have a different framework for identifying that greater than. Their framework for what the greater than is diverges, which freaks Paul and Barnabas out. Here they are just doing what they'd been commissioned to do, which was to spread what we call the good news, the gospel of Jesus Christ, to all the world. They seem completely unprepared for their audience, who are a people from a completely different nation and language, to not understand who it is they're representing, who they work for. They seem shocked that the Lystrans would fall back on their classification of the divine, that they would give credit to their pantheon of holiness. And so what do? Paul and Barnabas start running around, rending their clothing and saying, no, we are not Zeus, we are not Hermes, it's not Olympus that did this reversal. It is the living God, the author of creation, the sustainer of all life. In their panic, it feels to me that for Paul and Barnabas, if the God of Israel doesn't get all the credit, all is lost. Now, this passage is very often used to teach evangelical missionaries, meaning missionaries whose entire job is to spread the gospels, not to come along and side and do service work, to prepare them to know what to expect, including the intransigence of false faiths. That doesn't move me. That doesn't move me. I don't need the God of my stories to be exclusively recognized and worshiped. There's enough room in my concept of God for the many, many, many ways holiness is found to reach people, and people have found to describe that encounter. But I think there's a lesson here for us about how we do perceive God moving in the world. And if anything that we experience, we believe is of God. Because that matters. Where we see God in the world matters. Every day, in every moment of our lives, we are making assessments. We are interpreting cause and effect for everything we experience. We are assigning meaning to the days of our lives. Someone cuts you off in traffic. How do you feel about that person? Well, you're very kind and generous and think, oh, they're having a really bad day. Or you think, you idiot! Or as I was trained to say, why don't you take your half out of the middle? Yeah, that's a new phrase I learned. Yeah, when they're driving down the middle of the road and they're not sharing, yeah, oh, idiots! So that's an interpretation of the world. Now that's, I'm a really friendly driver, it turns out. That is a fairly innocuous, right, interpretation of the world, a fairly innocuous assessment of what is happening. It's not really impinging upon the quality of my life and hopefully not the lives of the people I'm mad at on the road. But there are other ways of finding meaning in life. There are other ways of interpreting our lives that are very dangerous, grievously so. Because of the white supremacist interpretation of our shared lives, the gunmen in Charleston killed African Americans while they were at Bible study. And because of the Christian supremacist interpretation of this world, the gunmen in Poway killed Jewish people while they're at worship. How we come to understand, how we come to interpret the shared fabric of our lives will determine if we're going to be able to continue to live these lives together at all. So I invite you today to think about your concept of God, what you give credit to God for. And will it be able to help us stop freaking out about our differences and learn to live together? What do you know about God? Not what you've learned, right? Not what you were taught. Not what you learned, not what you were taught. This is a church that loves to study. We love to wrestle with all kinds of theological perspectives and quandaries. We love it. We eat it up. But those kinds of learnings can stay, you might say, in the mind. stored away with other kinds of curiosities and philosophies without changing who we are or how we live. I'm talking about a different way of knowing. A different way of knowing. Your heart knows about God. Your body knows about God. Those two loci of knowledge, interconnected but really out of our control, they hold on to, they contain the most raw and essential understandings of the divine, because that's where the divine lives, where the divine is incarnate. So ask that part of God that is part of you. Ask that part of God that is part of you for an image or a few words that might describe God's self. Set aside doctrine. Set aside what you're supposed to believe. What words does God offer you? What image of God's self? For me, some of the words are constancy, intimacy, enormity, and hope. Do your God words, your Theo Logos, inform your interpretation of the world? Do they provide the framework by which you assess what you experience and how you should be? Do your God words help you to be a healer rather than one who hurts, someone who unites rather than divides? Does your concept of God give you a power like that of the paralytics in Matthew and Acts, so that you can walk through this world with an impossible strength and thanksgiving? Because that's what our world needs now. After millennia of failing on our own, I can only turn to what I believe we need God for, and what I can only give God credit for in all of God's names. We need apostles of a universal joy, one that is so resolute and so resilient that all of our parochial and partisan hatreds, not only won't they gain any more ground, but they're going to lose it. Amen.